شيء. Left off yesterday we're in the water park this time, 2 days ago. We left off with a basic question. We spent a lot of time the last couple of shiurim talking about the possibilities of change in halakha, perhaps under certain limited circumstances. The question we left off was, who exactly makes these changes in halakha? So I think the question really has to be thrown back a little bit. Who decides halakha in the first place? Who are the poskim exactly? Who exactly is making all these decisions within the realm of Tarshabat? So we said it's clear from the Chumash itself, from the Torah Shebech Sab, there's an institution of Beis and HaGodol. You know, the Torah says explicitly in Basha Shoftim, you have a Shaili, you go to the Beis and HaGodol, and Mishalai, whatever they say, that's what goes. But we raised the question, what happens after there is no longer a Beis and HaGodol, which is basically the time that we're living in, or the time already for the days of the Amoraim, there already was no Beis and HaGodol. So what do we do now? So that's what we left off with in the previous year. So let's develop the following Yesod. And I think that we can even give a mashal a little bit, a havdil from the American system of government, the Israeli system. I can't tell exactly how it works, but the American system of government that I espouse. America's democracy, right? So that means democracy means, as one said, fight the people for the people of the people. Who was that? Abe Lincoln? No. Kids, guys, come on. The government of the people for the people should never perish from this earth. Okay. So what does that mean in democracy? It means in theory, every time a law is made, who should decide whether the law is true? Everybody should decide. So let's say we have a Shiloh. Shiloh is raised in Congress. Should we raise the speed limit to 70 miles per hour? Right? Should we make the speed limit 70 miles per hour? So what should happen? In theory, what should happen is that you should go take a vote. 300 million people live in America. Everyone should vote. We should tally it up and decide. Okay, that's today's problem. And now tomorrow they decide to create some new, another law or something. They want to create, I don't know, a federal death penalty or something. So you have to go back to every single citizen, take another vote, and then the next day another vote. It's ridiculous, you can't run a system like that. So when we say that America is a democracy, it doesn't mean that each person votes on each question. What does it mean? It means there are representatives of the people, and the elected representatives are the ones who are supposed to be expressing what the will of the people are. That's exactly what happens. You vote for your president, for your senator, for your congressman, whoever it is, and then when the Shiloh comes up, so then we hope that the person who you elected is Shluch Shalom Kamos, is acting on your behalf. You're basically giving him the ability, the authority to act on your behalf. So in Halacha, there is a similar concept with a slight nuance of a difference, an important difference. The Torah sets up such a system also. Who decides halacha? The answer is anyone who's qualified to decide halacha. Decides halacha. It means a pasuk, a rav, a chacham, someone who learned halacha, knows the sugyas, he's familiar with the dinims, then he has a right. He should have a say in deciding what the pasuk halacha is. So in theory what that would mean is, anytime a new shayla comes up, where should we go? Anytime there's a new shayla, we should have a convention of all the rabbanim who have smicha, higil hara, anyone who's fit to pass the shaylas, should all get together. And each one should voice their own opinion and majority rules. Can you imagine a worse system than that? It's a bunch of chaos. Double hefkevel, you can't live with that. So the Torah says, we're going to set up a situation where we're going to have representatives of the Chachmei HaTorah. Who are the representatives of Chachmei HaTorah? Who do you think should be representative of Chachmei HaTorah? The greatest Chachmei HaChachamim. They should be the ones that represent the Chachmei HaTorah. Now here, this is not democracy. The Torah system doesn't work with the regular rules of democracy. In the sense of voting, it's not that we have a vote as to who's going to sit on the Sanhedrin. This is not the Congress. But rather, the Chachamim themselves, in each generation, the previous Sanhedrin, so when they see that there's a new member who's fit to be on the Sanhedrin, say a member of the Sanhedrin dies, so then they appoint the next member of the Sanhedrin. And then another member of the Sanhedrin dies, they appoint another. The Supreme Court is also, the Supreme Court is also not pure democracy. Who appoints the Supreme Court justice? The president. So here also, the Torah set up a situation. Moshe Rabbeinu sets up the first Sanhedrin, and then Sanhedrin to Sanhedrin to Sanhedrin to Beis HaGadol, Beis HaGadol. But the role of the Beis HaGadol, they're not acting on their own accord, they're acting as representatives of all the Chachmei Torah. Now, Anyone have any ideas? Going back to our original question we left off with 2 days ago. What do you do in the absence of the Beis Din HaGadol? If you can't have the system, for whatever reason the system is not working, the goyim aren't permitting it, or other technical reasons why the system is just not working, what do you do? So let's talk about things which are relevant for all of Klai Yisrael. What do you think you do? Get what? So, what do you got to do? If the role of the Sanhedrin is to be representation of the Chachmei HaTorah of each generation, so if you can't get the representatives, what do you got to do? You got to go back to the old system of asking each person their opinion. Now that's going to take time. That's going to be a hassle. It's not going to happen on a day-to-day basis, but it does happen sometimes. How does it happen? How does it happen that we can actually poll the opinion of the Chachmei HaTorah? It may take some time.
Shilohs and Shudos?
It's one method. One method. Simple history, it happens. Over time, it tends to happen. There are Shilohs that come up. Let's say, in an argument, you the following example. 100 years ago, ready? When when did Edison invent the light bulb?
1876.
There you go. Are you sure that's a light bulb? That was a telephone thing in 76.
I think so.
It was the same year?
77, I think.
The Alexander Bell was 76, right?
Yeah, 77.
77, there you go. Okay. So, Edison invents the light bulb. So now, Shiloh comes up. What's the status of electricity in Shabbos? Whoa, everyone's totally, all the posts in Europe are discussing what is it there. I said, I'm on a bada, da 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 da. It's a mutter, is it also, etc. As time developed, it became a consensus view. What was the consensus view? Absolutely consensus view. It's absolutely awesome. It's Chil Shabbos Gomer, nothing to do with that. Okay? But at some point, when the Shiloh first came, who's the new Shiloh? It's not interesting. Let's discuss it. Let's see. So sometimes just the historical process itself, just waiting it out, will sometimes be Machriya, will sometimes Paskin and Shiloh. Give me another example. During the time before it's Paskin, then you got problems. Right, wait, hold on one second. Here's another example. The famous machlokas Rashi and Beit HaTam about tefillin. Is the machlokas? Who knows?
The
famous machlokas
Rashi. The parshas are?
Order the parshas. Does Rashi remember? Remember the order?
I just
order. Rashi says, what's the order? Remember? Kadesh, Vayokhi V'yacha, Shema, and Vayom Shema. According to Beit HaTam, it's Kadesh, Vayokhi V'yacha, Vayom Shema, and Shema. Shema, Vayom Shema, flipped according to Beit HaTam. This was a raging machlokas in the days of the Rishonim. Everybody was involved, Haigon and the Rambam and the Balei Tesis and the Rambam. Everybody had what to say about this topic. It was a burning machlokas. There were mamish two different groups in Klai Yisrael in terms of the order of the parashas and Tefillin. And eventually the issue came to a rest. Eventually, the later Rishonim from Machriya, they decided, based on the proofs of the Gemara and other sources, they came to the conclusion that no, Rashi is in fact correct. And it was what's called in Halacha Nimnu V'Gamru. They voted, not literally voted, there was no referendum, but it became clear over time that this is the accepted halacha, this was accepted upon by all Chachmei HaTorah, and now, today, we live in the year 2008, if somebody wears Rabbeinu Tam Tzvil, I don't mean Rabbeinu Tam Tzvil, Echad Avnei, like a chassid or something, the guy says, no, I hold Rabbeinu Tam today, I'm going to wear Rabbeinu Tam Tzvil, we say about him, you're not Yotzei Mitzvot Tzvil in the Torah. Why? Because there was a psak of Chachmei HaTorah, of all of Chachmei HaTorah 800 years ago, but that's the halacha, I'm finished, end of discussion, the machlokas is over. What do you mean the psak of Chachmei HaTorah? Who gave the Chachmei HaTorah a right to Paskin? Of course they have a right to Paskin, because the Torah says the Sanhedrin has a right to Paskin. The Sanhedrin's all authority to Paskin is because they are representatives of the Chachmei HaTorah. How much more so the Chachmei HaTorah themselves Paskin? Of course that's the final psak. There's nothing else to discuss. Rabbi Sai, this is the Yisod HaYisodos. This is the fundamental principle as to the authority of what it says in the Gemara. You mentioned the question on Monday. Hey, wait a second. We can change halacha. How come I can't argue with Rav Ashi? What's the answer there? When Rav Ashi wrote something in the Gemara, when the Gemara writes something, who is speaking in the Gemara? You know, sometimes when we learn, we say, asks the Gemara, answers the Gemara. The Gemara says, what does that mean? What does it mean? That generation, that whole generation is not Chasinas HaGemara, was the kibbutz of Rov Chachmei Yisrael, the entire world. For those who know a little bit about Jewish history, where was the Jewish community situated at that time?
Babel.
The overwhelming majority of Jewish community lived in Babel in those years. there were a pocket of Jews in Eretz Yisrael, a very, very handful of Jews in Eretz Yisrael at the time. Anyone knows why, just historically why? Why was the situation so bad for the Jewish community in Eretz Yisrael?
They kept being attacked, sir.
Huh?
Kept being attacked.
Well, why? Why? Who was in control of Eretz Yisrael?
The Romans.
The Romans were in control of Eretz Yisrael. And what happened was that the Romans were always tough on the Jews in Eretz Yisrael, but things got even tougher in those years because, anyone knows that in 325?
Yeah, they accepted Christianity.
Right, okay. Council of?
Elders?
Trent.
Council of Trent? Council of Nicene, no? Right? I think so. So in 325, am I right? Who was the guy? Who was the emperor? Roman emperor?
Constantine.
Right, he was the one? Right,
Constantine.
You guys have been in high school more recently than I have. I've been to 7-30 years now. So the kids, whoever it was, whatever council it was, whatever number it was, so I think it was the Council of Nicaea in 325, if I'm not mistaken, give or take a couple of years, I think that was it. So the Romans accepted Christianity, and that basically spelled the end of the Jewish community of any shape or form, of any position of authority at that point. The HaKadosh Baruch Hu always grants to Yeshua that Babylonia at the time, Babylon, was not under the Roman Empire. Babylonia was times of the Persians and others, but it was not part of the Roman Empire, and as such it was spared that all those persecutions, and the Jewish community in Bavel was pretty, it was doing pretty well. So things were, although they were tough in Eretz Israel, in that part of the world, they were pretty good in Bavel, to such a point that all the overwhelming majority of the Talmid Chachamim came from Eretz Israel, started to migrate to Bavel, and by the time the Ravina Rav Ashi got around to writing the Gemara, what year are we talking about when the Gemara was concluded? Talking about approximately the year 500 of the Common Era. So at that time, the overwhelming majority of the Jewish people existed already in Bavel. There were pockets of Jewish communities in other places. There was already a little bit of a Jewish community, a little bit in Italy already there was. There was a little mamash, the beginnings of the Ashkenazi Jewish community, and eventually the Sephardi Jewish communities. But the action at this point in history was clearly Bavel, no question about it. And therefore, the Gemara was able to be written. Not only was the Gemara able to be written, but it was able to have the authority of all of Chachmi Yisrael, Rov Chachmi Yisrael. And as such, Rabbi Chanan writes, based on the Rosh and Rambams, that a psak given by the Chachmi HaGemara has the status of a psak of Beis Din HaGomer. Now, it is true that one Chacham can argue with another Chacham. Well, it's true that one Beis Din can argue with another Beis Din, but one individual cannot argue with Beis Din HaGadol. So since we do not have, not only do we not have a real Beis Din HaGadol anymore, we do not have kibbutz of Rov Chacham Yisrael anymore. It's hard for us to put our acts together in terms of that. So therefore, under no circumstances can we overturn anything that was accepted by that Beis Din HaGadol, in a sense, the colloquial Beis Din HaGadol, the quotation marks Beis Din HaGadol, the psak, the final words of Ravina Rav Ashi in the year 477 when the Chassidus HaGemara was put into place. That is what the Gemara calls Sofa Ra, in the end of Bava Metzia, 7th Bava Metzia, the Gemara says, that was the end. After the Gemara, you can interpret the Gemara, you can try to understand what the Gemara is talking about, try to extrapolate from the Gemara, but you cannot argue with the Gemara. Arguing the Gemara is tantamount to arguing with the Beis Din HaGadol, which is the Rambam writes in the Chasam, is tantamount to undermining the entire Masorah of Torah Shebaal Peh. It's interesting that Rabbi Chanan points out that he thinks that this idea of Chachmei Bavel, Talmud Bavli, as having the status of a Beis Din HaGadol, perhaps only applies to the Talmud Bavli and doesn't apply to the Talmud Yerushalmi. Why? Very good. When was the Talmud Yerushalmi written? Talmud Yerushalmi is a misnomer. Anyone know why? What do you mean by that? Talmud Yerushalmi is a misnomer. Where was it written in Yerushalayim? Where was it written? Anyone know? Is it not?
Yeah,
I forgot your name. Can you hear me?
Josh.
And what's the next to you is?
Gavi.
Gavi, no, Gavi, tell me. Where was the Talmud Yerushalmi written? You have any guesses? It was not Yerushalayim. There was nothing happening in Yerushalayim at that time. Yerushalayim was overtaken as a Roman city at that point. It was taken over by the Romans entirely. The Jewish community was where? Primarily? No, besides
Yavne.
This was already post Yavne. Talmud Yerushalmi was written by the Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan was a Talmud of Rita Nasi. Rita Nasi wrote the mission about the year 200. So you're talking about Talmidim Rabbi Yochanan, you're talking about around the year 300, give or take. The Jewish community was primarily up north in the Galil, in cities such as
Tzipori,
Tiberia. Tzfat is not mentioned in the Gemara, but some of there was a Jewish community there. So you're talking Tiberia area, that's where the action really was. And that's in fact where the Talmud Shabbat was written. The Talmud Shabbat was written in Tiberia. Remember, it had a very inspiring moment last summer, I was in Eretz Yisrael. And we went one day to Tiberia. We actually stayed overnight in Tiberia. And I spoke up in the morning. And I was learning at the time Yerushalmi Shvi, getting ready for the halachas of Shemitah. So I took out my Gemara Yerushalmi that I had with me. And I was sitting and learning within the hotel that we were staying. I was overlooking the Kinneret. And all of a sudden, like a dawn on me, wow, this is where this thing was written. This Yerushalmi was mamish written here, mamish, I don't know if I'm in the Sheraton Hotel, but it was written literally on the banks of the Kinneret. So I'll give you a little bit of a chizuk. So I'll call upon him, what was written a bit meir, I can't tell you. But the Talmud Yerushalmi, Rabbi Chanan says, was not the Rov Chachmei Yisrael. And therefore, Rabbi Chanan says, we understand why if there's a machlokas Bab Yerushalmi, what do we follow? Always follow the Bavli. Says Rabbi Chanan, the reason is because the Bavli has the status of Beis Nagod and Yerushalmi didn't.
Would we be able to argue
with
the Talmud
Yerushalmi? Yeah, so in theory, based on this understanding, you could argue with Talmud Yerushalmi. What I think is as follows, though, that we assume that, like the Rif writes and says Erevin, that the Chachmei Bavel had access to the Talmud Yerushalmi. Any part that they agreed to, any part they didn't disagree with, so they put their stamp of approval on. So even though at the time that it was written, it did not have the status of Chachmei, of Rav Chachmei Yisrael, therefore the Chachmei Bavel had a right to disagree with it, in time it was also accepted, and eventually the Yerushalmi also now. So you can't argue with Yerushalmi then. Okay, so Rabbi said, we have an interesting idea here, a very fascinating idea in terms of the development of the Tosh Shabbat, the notion of a Beis HaNagod, the notion of Chachmei Yisrael being, in a sense, the substitute of the Beis HaNagod. I want to extend this idea and expand this idea out of the Tosh Shabbat for a minute. I wanted to put another question at you. It seems to be a totally unrelated question. How do we observe Yom Tov today? Question that. Gabi, what do you think? What kind of question that? How do you observe Yom Tov? What kind of crazy question that? I don't mean that. This is the question.
Food.
Guys, tell me. What's your name again?
Josh.
You got a lot of Joshes here. Seems to be the.
Okay.
What's my question, Josh? You explain to me my question. Give me a long list of my question. How do we observe Yom Tov today? Yeah.
Without Beis,
it
needs to be the one to declare.
That's right. Don't you need Beis to be Mekadosh or Chodesh? Right? Without the Kiddush of Beis Din, so it doesn't become Rosh Chodesh. If it does become Rosh Chodesh, then it's not Chodesh Nisan. It's not Chodesh Nisan. It's not going to be Pesach.
But Hillel Hashem was Mesakin Rosh
Chodesh. Hillel Hashem was Mesakin all the Rosh Chodesh. Okay? That was 1700 years ago.
But he was wasn't that until...
What does that mean? So, yeah, I have a good question, right? You may be the right answer. I have a good question. So it has something to do with the man named Hillel Hasheni. Hillel Hasheni is called Hillel Hasheni because he was not Hillel Harishon. He was not the original Hillel, the real Hillel Hillel Zakin. He was several generations later. He was Hillel's great, a few greats grandsons, but he was not the original Hillel Zakin. He lived in the time of the Gemara. He lived in Eretz Yisrael. He was on the last base that basically was functioning in Eretz Yisrael. So Hillel Hasheni instituted for us the calendar, a whole new story. In the olden days, you had two witnesses who saw the new moon. They came to Beis and Beis declared Rosh Chodesh and Shoy. Today we don't do that anymore. Today we have a set calendar. What does that mean? What kind of game is that? The Torah says you have to declare it based on the Beis Din. So how can we just flip through a new calendar today and just declare Rosh Chodesh? What? What does it mean? Oh. So comes the Ramban and says, you know how the calendar works today? It's a special halacha that Beis Din can declare at a new moon even without any witnesses coming. Let's say the witnesses didn't come today. They got lost, they got lazy or something. Beis Din wants it to be Rosh Chodesh, what's the halacha? They can do it. How do you know that? Remember the Gemara Rosh Hashanah about Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Gamliel, about they had machlokas where Rosh Hashanah was? Remember, right? Remember the story? Rabbi Gamliel said it was Rosh Hashanah. It was this day, and Rabbi Yeshua said it was another day. Rabbi Gamliel told him that on the day of his Yom Kippur, he's got to carry his money and his walking stick, right? Comes to Rosh Hashanah. So comes the Mishnah there and says, how could that be? Maybe Rabbi Yeshua was right. So the answer is, it doesn't matter what Rabbi Yeshua says, because Rabbi Gamliel was head of the Beis Din. In the realm of Kiddush HaChodesh, Beis Din, even if they're wrong, they're right. So Kiddush HaChodesh Beis Din has the ultimate authority. They can declare Rosh Chodesh whenever they want, assuming that it's the 30th or the 31st day. So far so good? There's a new halacha, says the Rambam. What if Beis Din wants to go on vacation? And they don't want to be around to be bothered with Rosh Chodesh 2 weeks from now. They're going away. Or they can recess. So they want to declare Rosh Chodesh should be 2 weeks from now on Monday, even though we're not going to be around. Can they do that? So the Rambam writes they shouldn't do that. Not the right thing. They're supposed to wait for witnesses, but if they want to, they can do that also. Says the Rambam, you know what Hillel Sheni did? He realized that there's not going to be a Beis Din anymore. So you know what he did? He sat down and he said, okay, Rosh Chodesh Nisan next year is going to be on Tuesday. And Rosh Chodesh Iyar next year is going to be on Wednesday. And Rosh Chodesh Sivan is going to be on Sunday. And he went through and he says, okay, created a 19-year cycle. And then he says, he pressed the redial. And he said, okay, ditto, 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 ditto. Every 19 years, that's the way it's going to be. Odd when? When is it going to change?
He has no
until Mashiach, until Mashiach comes, that's where Rosh Chodesh is going to be. According to the Ramban, what Hillel HaShani did was he declared the Rosh Chodesh based on the special halacha that B'Shas Erchak you can declare Rosh Chodesh even before it actually comes. Says the Rambam, nothing doing. That's not at all what happened. That's not what Hillel HaShani did. Whatever Hillel HaShani did, says the Rambam, there's a special halacha that in the absence of Beis Din HaGadol, who is Mekadesh HaChodesh? When Beis Din HaGadol ceases to function, who is Mekadesh HaChodesh? Who has the authority of Mekadesh HaChodesh? Klal Yisrael. What do we say in the opening? Mekadesh? Yisrael Barash HaChodesh. Mekadesh Yisrael Bazman. The ultimate authority for Kiddush HaChodesh lies in the hands of Klal Yisrael. When you have a Beis Din does it. There's no Beis Din, then Klal Yisrael does it. All Hillel HaShani does, all he did for us was he did the math for us. He told us what makes sense astronomically. But in terms of the actual Kiddush, when does the Kiddush take place? When the Jewish people observe Rosh Chodesh on the day that it says in the calendar, that endows the day with Kiddush Rosh Chodesh, and that's what allows the Yom Tov to continue.
According to that, then, according to that reasoning, and nowadays, due to science, and you would defeat would be able to tell that maybe it would be a different day with this calendar.
In theory, we could, but we don't have to. We're not mechuyev to. Because again, in the realm of Kiddush HaChodesh, we can do it in a certain sense, but we want. It doesn't have to correspond to the sky. Okay?
Yeah.
Kiddush HaChodesh is given the Beis Din at the Klal Yisrael, it doesn't have to correspond to the sky.
But he is off, then he will be able
to defeat. In theory, according to this. The Rambam goes one step further. The Rambam says, who is Klal Yisrael for the purposes of Kiddush HaChodesh? Who's part of Klal Yisrael? You don't even need to be a chum for this. One condition to be part of Klal Yisrael for the purpose of Kiddush HaChodesh. You have to live in Eretz Yisrael. You know why? Because Kiddush HaChodesh takes place in Eretz Yisrael. Even when you had a Sanhedrin, so they had to do Kiddush HaChodesh in Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam says, it's the Jews who live in Eretz Yisrael, they're the ones who are saving the day for us in Chutz-Lartz. They're the Mekashim Eretz HaChodesh. The Rambam goes even one step further and says, for mitzvah, it's a startling statement. So Rambam says, what if Chas V'Shalom there would not be a Jewish community in Eretz Yisrael? Chas V'Shalom, at any time in history, there wouldn't be a million of Jews in all of Eretz Yisrael, says the Rambam, you know what would happen? There would be no Rosh Chodesh, there would be no Pesach, no Shana, no Kippur, no Sukkot, no Shavuos, nothing. All the Yom Tov would cease to exist until the Jewish community becomes restored to Eretz Yisrael. Says the Rambam, Baruch Hashem, even at the worst times of our history, there were always a handful of Jews. We said that the Romans took over and they decimated the Jewish community. Doesn't mean there was nobody here. There were always Jews in Eretz Yisrael. From the days of Yeshua, there were Jews in Eretz Yisrael. And during that period of time, in Arayam Azeh, it's the Jewish community of Eretz Yisrael that are Mekachim as a Chodesh. This is the Rambam that is getting a Kiddush HaChodesh. So Rabbi say, we have an unbelievable Kiddush in the Rambam. The Rambam says that there are two channels of Kiddush HaChodesh. There's Kiddush HaChodesh of Beis Din, and there's Kiddush HaChodesh of Klal Yisrael. Normally you have it done through Beis Din, and the absence of Beis Din, then you do it through Klal Yisrael. So the Rav, the Soloveitchik, suggested that these two aspects of Kiddush HaChodesh should not be separated from one another. They're really one and the same. What do I mean? What does the Rav mean by that? Fash, what do you think? What does the Rav mean by that?
The same.
Oh, save you. What do you think? What do you think that they're one and the same?
Is that the case that every member of Klal Yisrael to make some statement that today is Rosh Chodesh?
Right, so how is that related to the halacha that normally Kiddush HaChodesh is done by Beis Din? Two different mechanisms, two different channels.
Responsibility, right, from Beis Din, because the Sanhedrin had a rule
There you go. Very good. That Beis Din HaGadol, we already know this is so, we spoke about the first half of Shia tonight. The Beis Din HaGadol are the representatives of Klal Yisrael. So when you have representatives, when the Congress is functioning, you go to the Congress. If the Congress is not functioning, then you'd make a referendum, you go back to the people itself. So the Rav suggested that the same Yisod that the Rambam is telling us in Luchos Kiddush HaChodesh, that how do you have two tracks of Kiddush HaChodesh? Is Kiddush HaChodesh the Beis Din, is Kiddush HaChodesh Klal Yisrael? Make up your mind. Who is Kaveh the Chodesh? So the answer is, of course, that's Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael, Kaddish HaChodesh. Kaddish Yisrael, Ve'azmanim. HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem Resh Chodoshim. So when their representatives are around, the representatives do it. When the representatives aren't around, then you go back to the people themselves. So what the Rav said, B'das HaRambam in Kiddush HaChodesh, Rav Chaim Wasserman and said, B'das HaRambam in all the Psak of Beis Din HaGadol. This is what Beis Din HaGadol is also. In all things, Beis Din HaGadol is the representatives of the Chacham, of Klal Yisrael. So we have this Kabbalah Yisai, and when it comes back to the Kviyas HaLocha Tosheb HaPeh, who is the ultimate post-sake of Shilas? Let me ask you, who ultimately paskins Shilas? What's the real answer? People that are ultimate, not people who are qualified. Pasuk, right? The people ultimately are Kaveh with Allah. That's exactly right. The Beis Din is serving as a representation of the people's will, of the Chachamim's understanding of the Torah, but it's the human beings who are given the Torah who, again, it's not that, you know, let's say you have 100 people and 95 of them don't know how to read a Mishnah, but they're not going to have much of a vote in terms of the Pesach Halacha. But anyone who's qualified to paskin, so they become part of the halachic process. If I said, we're going to start now a slightly different nuance of discussing Tosh about that. Did it relate back to many of the things that we spoke about until now?
What makes something qualified?
Oh, we got a long way to go to get that. We're going to talk about that hopefully a little bit later on. What exactly qualifies as being qualified? So everybody's saying, we began this year, a couple of nights ago, with dividing Tosh about that really into what? Into how many categories?
Three
distinct categories. We had Halacha Moshe Masinai. Who remembers what else we had? Who remembers? We had Perushim, Kubal Masinai. We had Drushas. What was the common denominator between all three of them? The common denominator between all three. We showed that they were different. We pointed out the differences. What's the similarity between them? They're all one word.
They're all deraisa.
Whether something is a drasha, whether something is a lafrasina, it all has the status of being min haTorah. Now we have to move on to the next area of Shabbat. That's the realm of derabbanans. We know, anyone who's ever learned anything knows, that the Chacham institute things in so many different areas of halacha, in the realm of mitzvahs, in the realm of bnei mamonos, there's so many takanas chachamim, things which the Chachamim institute, and they're not telling us that these are dinim in haTorah. Not only they're not telling us them in haTorah, the Rambam writes in Hilchos Mamrim that if the Beis Din institute something midrabbanan and tells people that it's deraisa, anyone knows what happens to that Beis Din? They're in violation of what? Yes, deraisa. What deraisa? The Beis Din gets up and says, the Torah says not allowed to move milks and shabbos. That's a violation of Baltosif. I'm adding on to the Torah. Right? You think Baltosif means, what do you guys think Baltosif means? You think Baltosif means making five batim in your tefillin, right? Right? So that's one type of Baltosif. There's another kind of Baltosif, says the Rambam, that to misrepresent the Isser Derabbanan as an Isser Deraisa is an Isser Deraisa itself of Baltosif. The Ravid disagrees with that Rambam, because Mamun, the Ravid says that's not Baltosif. There's no Baltosif by Lavan. Anyone have a Rai for the Rambam, by the way? Anyone have a good source for the Rambam? Any ideas? What could be a possible source for the Rambam in the Chumash itself that adding on even to Isurim is a bad thing if you misrepresent it?
With Adam,
there you go. Amar Eitz Hadas, very good. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Adam HaRishon, don't eat from the Eitz Hadas. So Adam HaRishon and Chava came up with this great idea. Not only should we not eat from the Eitz Hadas, we shouldn't touch it either. Now that idea is not a bad idea, right? If I was an eighth candidate, if I would have done the same thing, we're never near the eighth of that, right? So I understand it makes sense in a sense to make a gezeira de rabbanon, to use the term very loosely, gezeira de rabbanon of Adam al-Chava, I guess the first din de rabbanon, Adam al-Chava, instituted that we're not allowed to, we shouldn't touch Yetzer Hara either, even though the Torah said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, we're not allowed to eat it. What was the mistake of Chava, though? She made a terrible mistake. What'd she tell the Nachash?
She said,
Afki Amar Elokim, right? She said that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, not to touch, Lo Sigubo. So that was a mistake. And the Rambam said that mistake was a violation in the sense of Baltosif, and they're still suffering out of Yom HaZeh. Right? They still have to go to work because of that. The women still have pain during Chava because of that. And the snakes are still running around on the floor because of that. Because of the Chait of Adam and Chava. Or because they misrepresented what the word of Hashem was. So good. So, the Chacham do have a right to make Yisurim Derabanan. They just have to be clear what's their eyes and what's their Derabanan. That's all that's necessary. How do you know the Chacham have a right to do that?
That's why they call them Chacham.
Is that why for the Chacham?
Isn't that the... If
maybe the Chacham's job is to remember the Torah Shabbat there, to remember the Halakha Moshe Sinai, to remember the very Shabbat Moshe Sinai, to Darshim Sukkim, to extrapolate Dinim Deraisa properly, and that's it. That's a pretty busy... That could keep you pretty busy.
What help with that?
Lo b'shemayim, interesting. Lo b'shemayim, he teaches us that shailas are decided by the Chumim, not by heavenly forces, but it doesn't tell me that the Chumim have a right to add something new. An idea? So, what's your name?
Ben,
what do you think? What possible source could there be that the Chumim have a right and an obligation, in a sense, to institute Dinim Derabbanan? Why are they doing this for? Perfect, to protect the mitzvah Torah. Who remembers the first, the mission beginning of Perkei Avos? Asu, Siyag LaTorah. Make a fence beyond the Torah. How do you know you're supposed to do that? It's a pasuk in Chumash. The Torah says, Ushmartem, anyone know? Ushmartem es mishmarti. The Torah says you should guard my halachas, guard my mitzvahs. How do you guard this? How do you shomer on something? You protect it, you put a fence around it, you lock it up. Isurim derabanan, prohibitions with the derabanan, are primarily what? Are primarily siyagim, are gezeiros, are mishmeres to protect the mitzvahs min haTorah. When the Chachamim institute something in the realm of gezeiros, what the Chachamim are really doing is fulfilling the mitzvah in the Torah, the dictate that the Torah gave them, of ushmartim es mishmarti. Now the truth is that there are really two different aspects of the Shmarat Mitzvah Mishmarati. There's the individual Shmarat Mitzvah Mishmarati, and then there's the communal Shmarat Mitzvah Mishmarati. Let's say I know that I have a particular Yetzer Hara. I know I have a particular, particular Yetzer Hara for Lashon Hara. And I know that if I go to this particular place, I will inevitably fall into speaking Lashon Hara. Should I go to that place? Shouldn't go to that place? That's the din of Shmarat Mitzvah Mishmarati. You have to make a mishmeres. You have to make a siyag. You have to be careful. Don't go somewhere if you think you're going to be violated in Yisra, in that place. That's a personal gezeirah. Was there an official, formal takanas hacham that said, don't go to this place because you, Rabbi Sibelsky, may speak Lashon Hara? No. If I, as an individual, know that I may fall in, I am required to make that personal gezeirah. I don't know if I call it an aveir, but I'm not supposed to be doing that. I'm supposed to be making that siyag. But the Chachamim, when they made gezeiras, they made universal gezeiras. They said, you know what? It's good for everybody not to move muktzah. Whether you think you're going to fall in, not going to fall in, we don't want anyone touching pencils on Shabbos. As a gezeira, you make up to write with a pencil. You don't want anyone doing X, Y, and Z on Shabbos. You make up to do this and that and the other malacha. So Shmatas Mishmarati is clear that this is the source for Isurim Derabbanan, for gezeiras Derabbanan. And we know that these gezeiras derabanan have been around for thousands and thousands of years. Different gezeiras derabanan appear in the Gemara as dating back to the days of Ba'is Rishon. There are others date back to the days of Ba'is Sheni. Anyone know some famous, very, very old gezeiras derabanan? Some of the oldest on the books. Very good. That David extended that law of Yichud. Very good. Minatori, not allowed of Yichud. Now that man and woman not allowed to be together in certain circumstances. And David elaborated upon that. Very good. Excellent. Anyone knows any others? Any older? Anyone came to the Erev trip today? Nobody came? Oh. So on the Erev trip today, we mentioned that at the very, very end, I don't know if everyone heard it, but as we were breaking up by the Makolas, I mentioned that there's an isser of carrying min haTorah. Shabbos, not allowed to carry, let's say, from a private area to a public area. But even within a private area, let's say even like in an apartment building, it's all surrounded by walls. If there are separate units dwelling in each in that house, so you're not even allowed to carry from one to another. That's a gezeira midrabbanan, is if you carry from one area to another area, you may make a mistake and carry to the street also. That's what's called the gezeira of Erev Chatzeres. And the way to get around that problem is to make an Erev Chatzeres. Again, I'll leave out the details for right now. That gezeira is very, very old. Anyone knows who made that gezeira? That gezeira of Erev Chatzeres. You're not allowed to carry in a common courtyard. You're not allowed to carry in a common building. The Gemara says, and it says, Erev that was instituted by Shlomo HaMelech and his Beis Din. So you're talking 3,000 years ago, a Beis Din, HaGadol, that instituted this gezeira of Erev Chatzeres. There are other Yisroim that were instituted much later. There are other gezeiras that were instituted during Bayi Sheni. There were some gezeiras that were instituted during the days of the Tanoim, some of the days of the Amorim. There are a lot of different gezeiras. Okay? But the source for gezeiras is Ushmarti Mis Mishmarti. And that's a din min haTorah. And everybody agrees, everybody has to listen to these gezeiras. What's my problem? Who knows my next problem? I just explained what gives the Chum the right, the authority to institute gezeiras Rabbanon. Are all dinim derabbanan gezeiros? Who knows? Gezeiros means like a fence. This is siyag l'Torah. That you're supposed to make a fence to protect you from violating an issur. Who wants to give me an example of something that the chachamim instituted that's not a gezeiro? It's not a siyag. You have an idea? A muktzah is a siyag. Because muktzah, if you move the pencil, then you're going to write with the pencil. Who knows? Who wants to give me an example? An example of a din derabbanan that has nothing, it's not going to protect you from anything whatsoever.
Bracha v'lam al-shirin?
Huh?
A bracha v'lam al-shirin?
Well, maybe all tefillah, maybe. Right? Maybe all shvaras.
Wouldn't it specifically be that? Because that was... Wasn't there a base in Agadol and there it was...
Well, there was a base in the first Agadol, was 18 rabbanan, then it was 18 rabbanan. Okay, let's give it more base. Give me a more basic. Give me an example, a very easy example. Give me an example. Neir's Hanukkah, thank you. Neir's Hanukkah. What's the siyag exactly, Neir's Hanukkah? What's gonna, and what would be so terrible if you, right? What's gonna be so terrible if you don't light Neir's Hanukkah? What terrible Yisur the rice are you gonna violate if you don't light Neir's Hanukkah? Or if you wanna just push it back a stock, what came before Hanukkah? Purim. How the Chumash did for him? What happens to the rabbi? The rabbi said, read the Megillah. I don't want to read the Megillah. The rabbi said, eat tzuris. I don't want to eat tzuris for him. The rabbi said, light Hanukkah. I don't want to eat light Hanukkah candles. So what happens to them? What right do they have to tell me what to do? I understand. I accept the authority of the Chachamim to tell me that this is Allah Moshem Sinai, to report to me this is a Perish Makum Sinai, to tell me a drasha, that what's going to happen? That I accept. But how? What right, what authority did the Chum have to tell me it's something new? So if there's something new, is it gezeira, is it siyag? Okay. But if there's something new, is a mitzvah, no siyag, no gezeira. What gives them authority to do that? Pasuk and Shoftim, which is mentioned before. What's that pasuk called? Lo sasur min adav shekilu chay min esmal. When Beis Din HaGadol institute something, you have to listen to them. You're mechaving to who? Anyone come to the Iyun Chabura before Mincha? No? It's not okay, so we spoke about it for a second today in a different context. The Torah says you have to listen to Beis Din HaGadol. The Rambam writes in the Chos Mamrim that mitzvah includes three different things. Three different aspects of what Beis Din HaGadol says you have to listen to. One is, says the Rambam, see if you can guess. One is... No, three different categories. One is when the Beis Din HaGadol reports to you their tradition that they received from Moshe Rabbeinu. What does that mean? What's included in the tradition from Moshe Rabbeinu? Which two parts? 1A and 1B? Halacha Moshe Mishinai and Pirush Mekubalim Mishinai, right? So Beis Din HaGadol tells you either one of those two, you must listen to them. Second category of Torah, drashas. Beis Din HaGadol makes a drasha, they decide that's the din. You have to listen to them also. You don't listen to them, that's the piss of their eyes of Los Osos. What's the third category? The Rabbanon. Says the Rambam, the Rabbanans were also subsumed under the authority of the din of Los Osos and Adova Shegilu Chayim Nisval. That mitzvah of Los Osos, according to the Rambam, includes not only pre-existing halacha moshe sinas and pre-existing halacha moshe perush mikumal mesin and new drushas which are extrapolating on dinim diaraisa, but it includes even as far as brand new dinim derabbanan which are not even misrepresentation as a dinim diaraisa. Neres Chanukah form they have nothing to do with diaraisa. Says the Ram and Alpha Mechain, the halacha is that beis din agdol has the right to institute them and you have to listen to them. Lo sasur min adavar sheyagilu chayim min small. This is the Rambam's understanding.
Sounds like it's more
just
a reason why you should listen to them, not why
it's a reason they actually have the power to do it. Well, if the Torah is saying that you are obligated to listen to them, so the premise of that is that Beis Din has the right to do it.
What's the purpose? That you're referring to, like, the Xeris, not necessarily something else.
Like, to listen to the Xeris in order to be able to do it. No, so you're asking a question in the Ram. How did the Ram know that that's included, that the Rabbans are included? Okay, that's a good question. That's a good question. That's the Ramban's question. So, notwithstanding the Shita's Ram, according to the Ram, we're all three. We understand Gezeiras are Siyagim, Mishmat, Mishmati, we got that down pat. Mitzvah's essay are included in Losasar, we're home free. Right? Comes the Ramban in Sefer Mitzvahs and says, it's not true. Comes the Ramban and says that Losasar only applies to Allah Chaloshim Sinai and Perush Mukhavam Sinai and to Drashas. Basically, according to Ramban, Losasar applies to the Araisa Dikadinim, but not in the realm of the Rabbanan. Once you're out of the realm of the Araisa, then Losasar doesn't exist, according to the Ramban. According to the Ramban, you don't have to listen to Chanukah Purim because of Losasar. What question are we now stuck with? So what if listening for? So according to the Rambam, so every Dirabbanan is covered by Losasur, it doesn't matter whether it's Siyag, not a Siyag. According to the Rambam, it says that Siyagim al Mishmat is Mishmat, that's a given. So the fact that Shlomo HaMelech made a Gezerah, that's for sure, that I understand. But according to the Rambam, why do we have to listen to Mitzvahs Dirabbanan, Mitzvahs Asay Dirabbanan, such as Chanukah and Purim? We don't know the answer to that question yet. So the mitzvah tomorrow, we're going to pick up hopefully with that point. According to Ramban, why are we listening to Dinim Derabbanan on the first place? Okay?